life with a precious load, spills its guts all over the road. Excuse me, I had to smile, lost my grip too for a while. I said, easy there, steady now, easy there, steady now. She didn't have the decency to sweep away what's left of me. I don't have the presence of mind to walk along in a straight line. Easy there, steady now, easy there, steady now. Call your name, I call it loud. I see your face in every crowd. Town, Dr. Martin's echo down. Old man heartbreak follows you, corruption shadow swallows you. I said, easy there, steady now, easy there, steady now, easy there, steady now, easy there, steady now.
I could think of another guitarist who combines the best of folk and rock better than you do. And I'd like to go back to when you first got a guitar and ask you about what you were listening to then, what direction you thought you wanted to head in back when you were however old you were.
I don't know if I had a direction, you know. I don't think you think when you're that young, or if you do, you're you know, Mozart or something.
Why'd you want a guitar?
There was already a guitar in the house. My father played guitar, and there's a lot of guitar music in the house. Django Reinhardt records and Les Paul records, and then my older sister, you know, when rock and roll came along, she had Buddy Holly records and Gene Vincent records. So it was lots of guitar stuff. So it was very logical to pick it up and play it. And I really tried to play everything. So I really absorbed, you know, a lot of folk stars and a lot of rock stars, you know, really, you know, probably before I was 15 or 16.
What was your father playing?
He was playing dance band jazz, very badly though. He wasn't, you know, he was just an amateur musician. And
to what context did he play in? He was a policeman?
Yeah. So he was, you know, he just noodled around the house. I mean, I think at some point he was in a dance band, you know, as, you know, the swinging cops or something. Like they call it. the four truncheons.
So did you teach yourself?
I taught myself a bit. My sister's boyfriends used to teach me. A couple of her boyfriends, you know, played guitar. So, while they were waiting for her to get ready, which was usually a good couple of hours, I get a good guitar lesson. And then I took classical lessons at one point for a couple of years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So when you were say a teenager, mm-hmm. what were the licks that you were trying hardest to learn?
The Buddy Holly sort of stuff. That's why I'm in the wrong tune. That sort of Elvis stuff. That sort of stuff. The Shadows, who were a great British instrumental band, were very... That kind of stuff. This is the folk stuff, yeah. And away we go, heave away, Santiago, oh! Bounce off Australia, hey! A lot of that sort of stuff, you know. I used to go to folk clubs as well, so you'd get a real diet, you know, you'd see someone really good. You see Davy Graham one week and then somebody, like, really atrocious next week. But then, you know, you could see blues artists coming to Britain from about 63 onwards, 63, 64.
And did they leave a big impression on you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's great. You know, you could see someone, you know, you'd heard on a record and you thought they were dead and then, you know, they'd turn up. It was just fantastic.
So you were learning to play in many different languages, really, when you were starting.
Really used to play a very wide range of music. And when Fairport started, we were really doing the same kind of thing, you know. But we tended to be whatever band was required to get the gig. So if they wanted an acoustic band to play in the folk club, you know, that was us. You know, we just get a repertoire together and do that. And if they wanted a blues band, then, you know, we'd learn some blues and be a blues band. So I suppose it was a good education. And at a certain point, we settled down to playing a kind of, you know, a sort of a traditional-based rock style that's fairly constant, still constant for me.
But you really have a lot of folk in your playing and in your singing. Mm-hmm. I think you have family from Scotland. You grew up in London. But was it ever a roots kind of thing for you?
It was, yeah. Well, you know, I grew up, you know, listening and not really thinking about, you know, Scottish music. You know, there's a lot of Scottish dance music in the house. And, you know,
that your parents played?
Yeah, or? You know, and the bookshelves were lined with sort of Walter Scott and Robert Burns and stuff, which, you know, out of boredom, you know, I used to read and actually I kind of got into. But back a generation, my family really used to be very musical. You know, my great uncles used to have a dance band, you know, in Scotland. And they play Scottish country music and jazz.
Scottish country music? Is it like just...
Scottish dance music.
Yeah, okay, like, you know, right.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Sorry, I'm in the wrong tuning again.
So,
You know.
Did you like that when you were growing up? Because a lot of people grow up very much disliking the music of their parents and their grandparents, and then when they get older, they go back to it.
I liked it, but I discarded it. I thought it wasn't important, and it definitely wasn't fashionable. You know, until I was about, you know, 17, 18, really. And
why did you go back to it then?
Well, I started to listen to more traditional music, and I started to connect it. You know, going to folk clubs and hearing a really great, you know, Scottish-Irish singer. I thought, oh, you know, this all makes sense, you know.
Now, did you think it would make sense within the context of your playing? You know, did you think you'd find a place for it within the context of rock and roll?
No, I really didn't think so. But in Fairport, you know, we were sort of a thinking band. You know, we were a bit intellectual, you know, for better for worse. And we used to think, well, you know, what should we do? You know, what's our direction? You know, do we want to be a, you know, a secondhand British blues band? You know, do we want to be a really lousy soul band? You know, or do we want to be original? And in pursuit of sort of originality and meaning, I think, in our music, it took us to play traditional music with a more contemporary lean. You know, and that for us was satisfying. And we thought, well, you know, here's something that we can do best. Here's something, you know, if Muddy Waters ever tries to sing the Bonnie Bunch of Roses, he'll come really unstuck, you know. We could show him a thing or two.
Richard Thompson from a 1994 Fresh Air studio concert. There's a new box set out compiling unreleased material from Thompson, much of it from live performances. We'll get back to our concert in a moment. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our 1994 interview and concert with Richard Thompson. Terry spoke with him after the release of his CD, Mirror Blue.
You want to do another song for us?
Okay, yes.
How about another one from the new album? There's a song called Mingus Eyes, which is Charles Mingus. And
yeah, it refers to Charles Mingus.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to say something about the song?
I could say that I suppose it's a song of someone looking back at youth, you know, and saying, you know, how stupid people are when they're young, because they think if they look like James Dean, then people will think they're cool and intelligent. Actually, people think they're stupid, you know. And perhaps at some point in your life, you realize that you look stupid. So, you know, in the song, you know, the protagonist says, you know, he used to think, you know, if I talk like Marlon Brando and people can't understand me, and if I make big soulful eyes at people like Charles Mingus, then perhaps they'll think I'm really great, but maybe not.
Squint at James Dean. Or the Stanislavski tears. Or the rebel punch that kills. Or the smile that slowly disappears.
Great.
Thank you.
Something else I have to say about your guitar playing. It's all all the technical virtuosity is in service of the music and the emotion. I just feel like you're such a not show-off player. Yeah, right. Such. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it? Yeah, might as well.
I'm sorry. I felt I had to point that out. Yeah. No, anyways.
Some of the people.
Yeah. I love it. Now I have to talk to you about your voice, too. We've been talking about your playing.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the days when you were learning Buddy Holly licks and Elvis Presley, you know, things off of Elvis Presley records and stuff, what were you trying to do vocally? Did you think of yourself as a singer yet, or were you just focusing
not really.
On guitar?
I didn't really sing, except for my own amusement, probably. I'd probably get up in a folk club and sing, but it was pretty awful, I'm sure. I never really, tried to be a singer until, I think when Sandy Denny left Fairport, then us chaps were sort of looked at each other. who's going to sing? So we sort of reluctantly, took on the roles. But we weren't born singers. I mean, I've really had to work very hard to get anywhere as a singer, and I'm still working at it. And, even 10 years ago, I don't think I was very good at all. And 20 years ago, I was pretty horrible. So, singing live a lot and doing solo shows a lot helps me to be better.
Richard Thompson, recorded in 1994. We'll hear more from Thompson in the second half of our show, including his cover of a Britney Spears hit. We'll end this half of Fresh Air with his version of The Who's Substitute. It comes from a new box set called RT, The Life and Music of Richard Thompson. I'm David Bianculli, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, sitting in for Terry Gross. Singer-songwriter Richard Thompson has a new box set of previously unreleased material called RT, The Life and Music of Richard Thompson. On today's show, we're dipping into our own archives to feature excerpts of his Fresh Air performances. In 2002, Thompson came to Fresh Air to play songs from a show based on great tunes he didn't write, called A Thousand Years of Pop Music. It included a Shakespearean song, an aria from Henry Purcell, and music by Hank Williams, The Beatles, ABBA, and a hit song from Britney Spears. Terry asked him about that one.
Nowadays, when people want to illustrate how bad certain pop music is, they will use as an example, Oops, I Did It Again, the big hit by Britney Spears.
Would they do that, really? Well,
yeah,
that's a shame.
You have taken that song and you're doing it in your show. Obviously, there's something that you really like about the song or the record?
Well, I think it's a good song. I think it's somewhat in the Swedish pop tradition. As far as I know, the songs are written and recorded in Sweden, and then they get flown over to the States, and Britney puts the voice on, and then they fly them back and produce them, and the results are mega, I kind of like Swedish pop music, the Cardigans and ABBA and what have you. And I think it's actually it's kind of a good song. It's quite witty in its own way, and I don't think it's terrible. I could find a lot more terrible songs around these days than this.
Oh, well, why don't you do it for us?
Okay. I think I did it again. I made you believe we're more than just friends. It might seem like a crush, but that doesn't mean that I'm serious. But to lose all my senses, it's just so typically me. Ooh, baby, baby, oops, I did it again. I played with your heart, got lost in the game. Ooh, baby, baby, oops, you think I'm in love, then I'm sent from above. I'm not that innocent. My problem is this, I'm dreaming away, wishing that heroes truly exist. I cry watching the days, you see I'm a fool in so many ways. But to lose all my senses, that's just so typically me. Baby, baby, oops, I did it again. I played with your heart, got lost in the game. Ooh, baby, baby, oops, you think I'm in love, then I'm sent from above. I'm not that innocent.
That's good.
It's not so bad, is it?
Yeah, that's very good.
Richard Thompson recorded in 2002. That was one of the songs included in his show, A Thousand Years of Pop Music. Let's keep moving and get right back to the other Richard Thompson concert we're featuring today, recorded in 1994.
Now, you do have this very, emotionally upfront quality in your voice. You know, you always sound, if the character is being tormented by the memory mm-hmm. of somebody, you sound like you are experiencing that torment. You know, I mean, there's just...
My soul is in torment most of the time.
No, but I mean, you do have this very emotionally upfront quality in your singing. Now, for somebody who didn't think of themselves as a singer, usually if somebody doesn't think about themselves as a singer, they're a little bit more like reserved because they're unsure.
Mm. I think sometimes though, it's an advantage to not be a singer. But I think Bob Dylan's a great singer, but you wouldn't say he's a accomplished singer.
Right.
I think Randy Newman, you know, sings his own songs really well. You know, Ry Cooder sings his own stuff really well. You know, you can be a singer who gets in the way of the song. You know, you can be a kind of a, dare I say, Michael Bolton. You know, there's a way of singing where you know, you're obviously a great singer, and you know, the idea of singing is to basically show how great you are, and that isn't always good. So, you know, the singing has to service the song.
Excuse me for I don't mean to make yourself conscious or anything, but there's something else you do in your singing. Sometimes at the end of a line, your voice will drop and you'll half speak, half sing a word, really? Which is really effective.
Oh, I don't know where that comes from. Maybe it's coming from not being able to hold the notes or something. Gordon Lightfoot's a great singer. I've always enjoyed his singing, and I'm probably influenced by, you know, Gordon Lightfoot and people like Muddy Waters and
who else?
A lot of, you know, Irish singers like Joe Heaney. You know, where you know the emotional payoff of a traditional song is often when you hit the low note. You know. And shine the bunny bunch of roses, oh, you know, and you get this real sort of, wow, you know. It's a nice thing sometimes.
So do you think your voice has...
Neil Diamond does it all the time.
Yeah, hey. Do you think your voice has changed since you started singing a lot?
Oh, yeah, it's got a lot bigger. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my range actually keeps getting bigger, which it gets higher and lower.
Do you do exercises for it?
I don't know. I just sort of thrash it to death and it seems to work.
There's another song I'd like to ask you to do called I Can't Wake Up.
Okay, here it comes. He
In my nightmare, everything's wrong. I'm waiting for love, but you come along. You smile, you wave, you kiss me, ciao. But you seem too happy to see me somehow. And then the sky falls in on my head. Your nails grow long, your eyes turn red. You say forever, dear, and a day. You swear that you're never gonna go away. And my feet won't move to run the other way. And I can't wake up to save my life. No, I can't wake up to save my life. In my nightmare, you forgive me. The cruelest gift you could ever give me. You say that you understand me now. Your eyes say, brother, I get you somehow. And then the lightning streaks across the room. You smell like something fresh from the tomb. Squeeze too hard, you insist on kissing. When it seems like half your face is missing, and your hair's turned into reptiles hissing. And I can't wake up to save my life. No, I can't wake up to save my life. I done make my dreams go bad. Like Buster Boy's coming home to dad. What you reap, so shall you sow. Defeats don't fail me. Go, man, go. Cause I can't wake up to save my life. No, I can't wake up to save my life. No, I can't wake up.
Is there a story behind the song?
It's just, you know, it's just a story. High notes. It's just a dream, you know.
Bad dream.
Bad dream. I suppose it's a kind of, a classic put-down song, really. It's, you know.
Richard Thompson recorded in 1994. We'll hear more of his interview and performance in a moment. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our concert with Richard Thompson. His new box set, RT, The Life and Music of Richard Thompson, is a collection of previously unreleased material.
Oh, spare me from having to read your lyrics and sounding
no,
like
me.
I'm giving the squarest reading in the world. So there's something I want to quote here. Can I ask you to quote the line? This is from The Way That It Shows. I just think it's a particularly well-written couple of lines here. Can you quote the first few lines?
Oh, that one. Gonna give yourself away to some Casanova on the spills and stains of a backstage sofa. He'll catch you yawning with one leg over. Is that enough?
Yeah, I think that's really great writing. I mean, I think
Casanova over. Well, I at that point, I was the rhyme scheme was getting desperate. I was running out of possibilities.
I'm not even thinking about the rhyme, but the spills and the stains on the couch. I thought that was really nice.
I was actually thinking of a backstage in Philadelphia.
Oh, really?
I can't remember what the place is called. A really sort of rundown rock and roll theater. And it's got the smelliest couch I've ever seen in my life.
Huh.
Yeah, you can sort of smell the sort of improvised sex oozing off this couch. Quite disturbing.
Now, who are the songwriters you admire? And did you ever go through a period of trying to write in the manner of different songwriters, like you went through a period of trying to play in the style of different guitarists?
Yeah, I think it's a great exercise. I still do it. You know, I still think, well, you know, here's a songwriter who, you know, has a great kind of flow or something. You know, why don't I try and write a song in that style? You know, I still do that. You know, early on, I was listening to. Well, I was listening to, you know, people like the Everly Brothers and, you know, Phil Oakes and Richard Farina. And I've always been influenced by Scottish ballads. I think that's probably the richest place you can find songs, because they're just so good and they're so stunningly, you know, succinct.
But they tell whole stories.
There's so much in a verse. And it's so beautifully pared down over centuries. Just wonderful stuff. So that's a big influence. And so some of the Scottish, you know, writers like Carolina Oliphant and Burns, you know, Burns Walter Scott.
Can I ask you to play a chorus of one of your songs that you feel is especially influenced by traditional Scottish ballads?
Whew, gosh. Okay, let's think of it better then. Oh, you speak the words locked in my breath, but it's late for me. Let an old man rest. One more black and tan on the barricades to keep me safe from loving. And it goes on. But in terms of, verse structure, word usage, word repetition, mm-hmm. blah, 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 you know, and tune. I mean, it's very...
And the way you sang it.
Very Scottish, yeah.
Yeah. What I'd like to ask you to do now is sometimes when we have a concert, especially with somebody who mm-hmm. writes their own songs, I'd like to ask the performer to do a song that is kind of out of character, something mm-hmm. that we might be surprised that you like because it might seem out of character, or a song that a lot of people think of as a kind of square, not very interesting song, but a song that you love and you'd like to resurrect. So any songs you'd want to do that fit into any of those categories?
Well, okay.
I asked him about this earlier, ladies and gentlemen.
Here's something from Carousel.
Great.
I hope. Let me see. When you walk through a storm, hold your head up high and don't be afraid of the dark. At the end a golden mile and the sweet silver song of the lark. Oh, gone
I love that. I thought that was great.
It's a great song, you know.
Well, what made you think of that song?
I don't know. I've always liked it. In England, it's a football song.
Is it really?
It's associated with the Liverpool Football Club, and it was, it's actually a hit for Jerry and the Pacemakers.
But you don't remember them doing
60.
That.
Oh. I don't think they would have released it here. They wouldn't have bothered. But,
I was wondering how you knew all the words. Most people could sing a chorus, but they couldn't get through the whole song.
Well, it does go around again, the same. I was going to spare you that.
I've really just so enjoyed the concert. I'm so thrilled we were able to do this. I want to thank you very, very much.
I'm very grateful you'd have me. Thank you.
Would you like to close with another song from
the
new album? Or if you prefer something earlier? Or?
Yeah, I could do something earlier.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, what would you like?
Do you feel so good?
Okay.
Yeah, why don't you do Feel So Good?
Okay.
This is from a previous album from a couple of years ago called Rumor and Sigh.
It is indeed, yes. Here we go. I feel so good, I'm going to break somebody's heart tonight. I feel so good, I'm gonna take someone apart tonight. They put me in jail for my deviant ways. 2 years, 7 months, and 16 days. Now I'm back on the street in a purple haze. I feel so good. I feel so good. I feel so good, I'm gonna break somebody's heart tonight. So good, I'm gonna make somebody's day tonight. I feel so good, I'm gonna make somebody pay tonight. I'm old enough to sin, but I'm too young to vote. Society been dragging on the tail of my coat. But I've got a suitcase full of 50-pound notes and a half-naked woman with a tongue down my throat. And I feel so good, and I feel so good, I feel so good, I'm gonna break somebody's heart tonight. They made me pay for the things I've done. Now it's my turn to have all the fun. I feel so good, I'm gonna break somebody's heart tonight.
That's Richard Thompson, recorded in 1994. A new box set, RT, The Life and Music of Richard Thompson, has just been released. It's a collection of previously unreleased material, including live performances and demos. Coming up, David Edelstein reviews the movie Freedom Land. This is Fresh Air.